Welcome to episode 113 of The Lab. I'm your host, Brad Barton. Frank Rosenblatt's perceptron had some serious limitations. There were relatively simple functions it could not handle. In Marvin Minsky and Seymour Papert's book, they specifically pointed out that to solve these other functions, the perceptron would have to have at least three layers. An input layer, an output layer, and in between them, what's called the hidden layer. The algorithm for training the perceptron was fairly simple. If you needed an output and there wasn't one, you change the weights of the synapses. When there's only two layers, an input and output layer, the procedure for doing so is simple. There was no known way to train a perceptron with more than two layers. And in the book Perceptrons, the author suggested that there was no way at all. The problem of training multi-layer perceptrons, or multi-layer neural networks, was solved by the early 1970s through a method called backpropagation. But no one was paying attention. It was the middle of the AI winter, and nobody was interested in neural networks. The methods fell into obscurity. They had to be rediscovered in the early 1980s, and it wasn't until 1986 that people started to take notice of the fact that the issues that had doomed the perceptron had been overcome. By the 1990s, it had been shown that a multi-layer neural network was a universal approximator. That meant that there wasn't a function it couldn't at least get close to. While that's useful, a mathematical function puts one number in and gets one number out. There are certain tasks that a function is not enough for. To solve this problem, you need to be able to put loops in your neural network. Say you have five layers, input 2, 3, 4, and output. You can have connections that go from, say, layer 4 to layer 2, or from 4 to 1, or from 3 to 1. You can even have neurons that connect to themselves. There are brain cells, neurons, whose axons loop around to form a synapse on their own dendrite. So every time that neuron fires, it sends itself a signal. Once you allow loops within your neural networks, again you have the issue of trying to figure out how to train them, how to adjust the weights to improve their performance. The methods that existed tended to give ridiculous answers once there were loops involved. Ways around that problem were eventually discovered, but not before another AI winter hit in the late 90s. By the early 2000s, there was little to no interest in neural networks. There were publications that refused to publish papers about them, but there were a few people who kept working on them. Jeffrey Hinton, Yoshua Bengio, and Yan LeCun. In 2006, a paper was published that described a fast method for training multi-layer neural networks. When you first start with a neural network, the weights of the synapses are usually random. Then, as you train the neural network, the weights are adjusted until the right input produces the right output. Hinton and others discovered that starting with random weights for a multi-layer neural network didn't really work. What they used was a pre-training method. In episode 111, we talked about the auto-associative map. That is one of several ways you can get a neural network to sort of train itself. Unsupervised learning. Each layer is allowed some time to do some unsupervised learning first. The training data is given to the input layer until it's formed its associations. Then, what would have been the output is used as the input for the next layer. That layer is allowed to do some unsupervised learning, using the first layer's output as its input. This continues for each layer in turn. Once the pre-training has been completed, the entire network is trained. Allowing these associations to form one layer at a time has managed to solve a number of problems that were considered impossible in AI just a couple of decades ago. In fact, I have some links to some talks where they talk about some of the problems that have been solved through this method, deep learning. You can find those by visiting the show page, which lives at thelabwithbrad.com. Along with the various breakthroughs in the methods, there's one other breakthrough that has taken deep learning out of the lab and into the hands of clever hobbyists. It is a rather nifty hardware hack, which we'll talk about next time.